Welcome into another episode of the Bengals Beat podcast. I'm Kelsey Conway here with my co-host Charlie Goldsmith, and we are here to break down the big matchup between the Bengals and Ravens this Sunday, taking place at Paul Brown Stadium. For the division, obviously, Charlie, the Bengals have one more game to go after this one, but you can chalk this one up to being this is the game for the AFC crown, don't you think?
Yeah, I've been thinking about the historical significance of games like this. When you look at the moments that have been put over the top, different standout Bengals teams, you can look at someone mentioned 40 years ago, the Bengals beat the Steelers, beat Terry Bradshaw to clinch a playoff spot. You can think of 2012 and 2014 winning important divisional games at the end of the season with huge significance. You know, this game feels like that type of magnitude. It feels like it's all set up with Burrow versus Lamar Jackson, with the style of defense that the Bengals have had highs and lows against. This feels like the kind of matchup with that sort of stakes.
Well, and before we move on, let's talk about it, because it could potentially be Burrow versus Tyler Huntley, because Lamar Jackson is dealing with an injury. He did not practice yesterday, but you have to think if he's even, 60-70%, he'll try and play this game, because as a competitor, he knows that, you know, this game could potentially be the game that puts the Ravens in the postseason or keeps them out of it. So you'd have to imagine if he can play, he will. But it doesn't even seem like, obviously, Lamar Jackson adds a different element. But Tyler Huntley was impressive last week against the Packers, and you know that the Bengals are going to prepare for both.
So, yeah, of course, the Bengals are preparing for both. And regardless of who is at quarterback, what Lou Anarumo has always stressed in this matchup is that it starts with stopping the run. Mm-hmm. The Bengals won't be able to use the same run-specific game plan they used in Week 7 just because of the personnel they're down. But regardless of who's at quarterback, there are going to be a lot of similar stressing points. Stopping the run, stopping Mark Andrews are going to be massive pieces of this game because the Ravens really run the same style of offense regardless of who's a quarterback.
Yeah, so let's talk about the Mark Andrews matchup a little bit, because this is the biggest matchup of the game, because I'm not worried about what the Bengals are going to do against the run. They've been very good against the run. DJ Reader, who I think should have been a Pro Bowl player, thought he was a big time Pro Bowl snub, but that's for a later conversation. And Larry Ogunjobi and Sam Hubbard have been very good against the run. So I'm not worried about the Ravens running all over. The matchup that I'm very interested to see how it plays out, because they didn't necessarily do the best job against Kittle a couple weeks ago, is how the Ravens scheme up Mark Andrews to be their go-to guy, because it seems like everybody in the world knows Lamar Jackson's favorite target is Mark Andrews, yet he's still so productive. And he's a little different than Kittle. He's a little bit bigger than Kittle, and they use him a little different. But that's a mismatch against Von Bell in terms of size and physicality, don't you think?
Well, my guess is, just based off how they guarded Andrews some last time they played him and based off the different looks they threw at both Kittle and Noah Fant, I think that Trey Flowers is going to get the bulk of that matchup, specifically on third downs. Flowers is a guy who made his Bengals debut in Week 7. They used him for the first time because of the track record he has guarding Andrews. They played each other in college. They played each other multiple times in the NFL. And Flowers probably has spent more time guarding Mark Andrews than any other tight end in football. That's the third down package I'm expecting. Jermaine Pratt is the only linebacker on the field with Trey Flowers in one-on-one man matchup. The Bengals have the cornerbacks to make that work otherwise. I guess it's more of a concern early downs. The Bengals are likely going to be using more zone, but that'll be more pressure and more responsibility on Pratt and on Marcus Bailey in the middle of the field. They'll both likely need to make a couple plays against Andrews in particular, because on early downs, they're going to have to be put in that situation, because Flowers has mostly played on third downs.
Yeah, it just is going to be all about Mark Andrews, and we're not understating it. He is the offense besides Lamar and his legs. They really don't use Sammy Watkins and Hollywood Brown. I know in the first meeting, Jackson had that long pass to Hollywood Brown that was kind of, I hadn't been used to seeing Lamar air it out like that, but it just hasn't been that consistent from the Ravens offense. So to be honest, I really think if the Bengals are able to limit, because you're not going to shut down a player like Mark Andrews, if they're able to limit Mark Andrews' production and the offense doesn't come out asleep like they have the last couple of games, the Bengals should win this game. They're a better team and they're a more healthy team. I read that yesterday, the Ravens only had, I think, 13 defensive players practicing. I mean, they've just been absolutely ravaged by injuries. And it's a commendable effort by John Harbaugh that the fact that this team even has 8 wins, it goes to show you how deep their roster is and how good of a coach he is. But let's spend some time talking about the Bengals offense. Charlie, what do you, and I know games are different, but what are you diagnosing seems to be the issue for the Bengals offense in terms of being able to start fast and score points in the first and second quarters?
Yep, I went through and charted the third downs in particular, because they're usually not 3rd and 8, 3rd and 9, 3rd and 10. A lot of these drives are just set back by what happens on 3rd and short. And the majority of the issues that I saw that were setting the drive back were false starts, holdings, missed opportunities and pass protection. Think of against the Raiders, Jonah Williams allowing the strip sack fumble. There was the strip sack then against the 49ers 2 weeks later. There was a crucial holding penalty on Quentin Spain that set back a drive last week. There was allowing Justin Simmons to break free up the middle on a safety blitz last week. A lot of moments like that that you can probably pin on the offensive line and the pass protection units that are leading to these setbacks early in games. That's what I'm seeing.
Yeah, I think it's a problem. I really do. And in Denver, in the press box, I just remember sitting next to a couple of the other press members, and I was like, this is going to catch up to them at some point. I know that they'll talk about how it was a complete win and that the Bengals offense did enough and they didn't turn the ball over. But if you want to contend and play against teams like Kansas City and you know, if they get in the playoffs facing other AFC teams that can put up points, the Bengals cannot continue to spot teams, you know, two scores, and they can't be shut out and go into halftime with just 6 points. That's just not going to do it. And it's head scratching because you see all the talent the Bengals have on offense. You've seen games like the Bengals' first meeting with Baltimore, like their games against the Steelers, where their offense looks unstoppable. And then you see games like Denver and the Chargers and the 49ers where they don't do anything in the first half, and you just wonder where the consistency is with this offense.
I do think there's a discrepancy to make between, or a difference to point out between the 49ers and the Chargers games and the Broncos game. So the 49ers and the Chargers game, the Bengals knew they needed to score. And a lot of the turnovers that happened, a lot of the pass protection breakdowns that happened, occurred on plays where they were trying to take shots down the field. It was a game where the Bengals expected they needed to be able to score 21, 28, 34 points, something like that, to be competitive. I think Denver was different. Like, look at the games that Zach Taylor has played against the Vic Fangio-style defense throughout his career. Like, look at there were a lot of these matchups in 2018 in LA in particular, where like that those LA teams committed turnovers early in the game that had huge setbacks. Like, even you saw something kind of similar when the Bengals played the Bears in week 2 this season. The Bengals learned from that game that if they don't turn the ball over, and Taylor learned from his previous experiences against similar styles of defenses, that's kind of all that matters. So I do think the Bengals offense was more conservative on a few situations where they did have 3rd and longs. That's why you saw checkdowns to Samaje Perine and CJ Uzomah. I think the Broncos game in particular was less concerning than the 49ers and the Chargers game for the slow starts of the defense, because the Bengals were kind of willing to live with a slow start offensively because of the style of defense and the lack of explosive offense they were facing. But obviously against the Ravens, against the Browns, against the Chiefs, those will be the kind of games where the Bengals will need to score, and they know it.
Well, so let's talk about that, because I asked Joe Burrow yesterday. You can say what you want about it, but quarterbacks' legacies are defined by how they do in the postseason. I mean, Kirk Cousins is a perfect example, and he even said it after his Monday Night Football game against the Bears to Lisa Salters. He said that basically he understands why the criticism of him is Kirk Cousins is good, but ... because he said, I haven't won enough big enough games. And a quarterback's legacy is basically determined by how they play in big games. Look at Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, those type of quarterbacks. And I asked Joe Burrow about it, and I said, I know you're just in your second year, and I know winning the game is most important from a team standpoint, but do you acknowledge that games like these matter more from a quarterback standpoint? And, you know, in typical Joe Burrow fashion, he was like, yeah, I do understand that a quarterback is judged based off of these big games, the games in December and the postseason games. And I thought it was refreshing to hear from Burrow basically just saying like, yeah, I get it. Like when it comes to these games, you can't afford to not play well in these games that can potentially clinch divisions, clinch playoff spots, get your team to the next round. So, and I wrote a story about it yesterday that's in the paper today, and it's basically just about the good thing for the Bengals and Bengals fans is Burrow seems to play his best when he has doubters and when his team kind of comes into a situation almost as like the underdog. He seems to relish in opportunities to bring his team back, as we've seen multiple times, Jaguars game, Chargers game, and even the 49ers game. And so you don't worry about a second-year quarterback if the stage is too big for him when you have a player like Burrow.
So I'm hoping Lamar Jackson's going to play, and here's why. Burrow versus Lamar Jackson is going to be the defining quarterback rivalry of the AFC North for the next 10 years. Like, Cleveland hasn't committed to Baker long-term. Pittsburgh's about to have a quarterback change. And in any division, the most likely path to sustained success is having a young quarterback like the Bengals have and like the Ravens have. I think that we're going to compare Burrow to Lamar more than any other quarterback in the NFL, even more than the quarterbacks in Burrow's own draft class. Look at, for example, what happened literally yesterday. Lamar Jackson was the third quarterback to get the AFC Pro Bowl spots. Jackson was compared to Burrow, and Jackson won for the Pro Bowl voting. Burrow's going to be, again, compared to Jackson for Pro Bowl, all pro. And then on the field, hopefully with Jackson playing this week, in matchups like this one, they're going to play dozens of December games during their career with stakes like this. And what's exciting is that this is the first one. This is the first brick in the Jackson versus Burrow quarterback rivalry, like we've seen with, like I mentioned earlier, Ken Anderson and Terry Bradshaw, or Carson Palmer and Ben Roethlisberger. Andy Dalton and Joe Flacco had a back and forth for a while. Boomer Esiason was often compared to Warren Moon. Every quarterback in Bengals history, all of the solid standout quarterbacks they've had, has a quarterback that they have to go up against and go through. You see this in football. You know, Rodgers and Matthew Stafford was a famous one. Eli Manning and Tony Romo is a famous one. You see these quarterback matchups that end up being breakthrough defining moments for different players. And it looks like it has all the makings for Burrow that it's going to be Lamar Jackson that he'll be going up against for the rest of his career.
Fun for football fans, because those are two players that when they're on, they're electric to watch and they're fun to watch. So hoping that it is Lamar Jackson, because that will be an entertaining game that the football world deserves right now. Let's just talk about two more things offensively. Do you think Sunday's game will be a Joe Burrow game or a Joe Mixon game?
That's a great question. My memory of the first matchup against the Ravens is all of the running attack came as kind of after the Ravens gave up in the fourth quarter. Mixon broke that run and P-Ryan broke that run. The difference is Calais Campbell's status for this game is uncertain, so that might open up some more opportunities. But my general expectation for a Ravens defense that's going to be playing multiple players in the secondary who are on the practice squad is soft zone coverage. So I'm kind of expecting some similarities to, like, you know, the 49ers game plan where they had opportunities for short passes in front of the line of scrimmage. Kind of more that style of game where the Ravens are going to be focused on taking away the deep ball. They have some of their better players at stopping the run, assuming Campbell plays, and then they're pretty solid at linebacker compared to their other positions right now, and they're really weak at cornerback. So just that matchup, I think, makes it more of an advantageous matchup for the Bengals passing game compared to anything else.
So speaking of the Bengals passing game, the last note I wanted to talk about with you was the last time Ja'Marr Chase had a 100-yard receiving game. He obviously had 201 against the Ravens the first time around. That was the last time he really had like a monstrous yardage game. I know T. Higgins has been the guy recently. Tyler Boyd was the guy in Denver. And it's a good problem for the Bengals to have. But do you envision Ja'Marr Chase kind of reinventing himself and getting back to the explosive plays that we were accustomed to seeing? I know he could have had a couple over the last couple of games that have been drops or have been not called as touchdowns and, you know, all of those things. But do you think we're going to see Ja'Marr Chase kind of get back to being Burrow's number one guy?
It's interesting, and it's going to depend on the defense the Ravens play. So remember what happened in the first Ravens game. The Bengals spent the whole first half targeting Anthony Everett, who was a backup cornerback filling in, and he was in man-to-man coverage always with T. Higgins. Then at the end of the first half, the Bengals kind of realized that Chase was winning his matchup with Marlon Humphrey, and in the third quarter, Chase exploded. So right now this week, Everett is the Ravens' number one cornerback because of all the injuries that have hit their secondary, and they have, you know, an even weaker guy than him at the other outside cornerback spot. I'm curious if the Ravens will stick with their man-to-man defense approach because of how much the Bengals have killed man and struggled against zone and because of how weak the Ravens are at cornerback. So if Everett does get the matchup with Chase, I would expect Chase to be more heavily involved than he was, you know, especially than last week. But if the Ravens go to more of a zone approach, statistically, it feels like that's created more opportunities for guys like Tyler Boyd, and that's where my focus would turn.
Yeah, it'll be fun to see which one of those three-headed monsters is the guy. But the good thing is the Bengals have really gotten T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd going, so they truly do feel like it's a pick your poison. Who are you going to take away in the game? That's a great problem to have. And the fact that they're all three healthy is huge. I'm knocking on wood, but just a quick injury note regarding the Bengals. For the most part, they are one of the healthiest teams in the NFL, and that is such a bonus for this team in December where, you know, on the other side of the ball, the Ravens couldn't be more injured. The Bengals are very healthy. Joe Burrow and Joe Mixon were full participants in practice on Wednesday. DJ Reader didn't practice, but he tweeted he's fine. Other than that, Chidobe Awuzie, we'll find out if he's able to be back for this game. He was placed on the COVID reserve list at the end of last week, and I asked Zach Taylor about it, and he didn't really give much information, but the good thing is the Bengals are loaded with depth at corner, so they have Eli Apple and Trey Waynes available if Awuzie is not able to make it back. No Logan Wilson again this week. Linebacker is the one position the Bengals have been a little bit decimated at. Joe Bocci injured himself against the Broncos, and Akeem Davis-Gaither hasn't been available for a couple weeks. So as Charlie mentioned, it is the Jermaine Pratt show. Don't really worry about that being a weakness so much in this game because the way the guys up front for the Bengals have been playing. As I mentioned in the video, Trey Hendrickson named to his first Pro Bowl, Sam Hubbard an alternate, and Larry Ogunjobi. Don't you kind of feel bad that DJ Reader was left out?
So here's my takeaway from Pro Bowl voting yesterday. That was my big takeaway. Looking at how the outside linebacker position was determined, how the defensive tackles were determined, how the defensive ends were determined. It's a pass rushing award more than anything. And as we know, DJ Reader isn't a pass rusher. So I guess that's my explanation. Mm-hmm. And it's a challenge to the Pro Bowl community to reward more all around games at multiple positions like linebacker too.
I agree with that. All right, Charlie. Well, that is it for us wrapping up this week's episode of the Bengals Beat podcast. Now I'm going to bring in Jason Hoffman to talk about this week's upcoming NFL slate. Charlie, talk to you later.
Talk to you soon.
Let me tell you about the new sports app we've launched as part of our USA Today family. USA Today Sports Plus is the new sports app that puts the fans first. Get the latest scores, stats, and standings, and enjoy interactive experiences with our award-winning sports writers. Download USA Today Sports Plus from the Apple or Google Play stores today. USA Today Sports Plus, fan harder. Well, here he is, ladies and gentlemen. It's Jason Hoffman here for a Christmas edition of our weekly segment talking about all things. Is it week 16 already? I think it's week 16.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
I stopped losing count after about week 3. But lots to talk about. And I'm just gonna pat myself on the back because I've been crushing it lately with my advice.
You have, if people have been betting you and fading me the last 3 weeks, they have been doing quite well. Not terrible though on my end, but yeah, you've been knocking out of the park, crushing it. Yes, absolutely. So
let's talk about this week, and I want to start with tonight's game. Because
which, if you're listening to this before kickoff, remember, unless you are in the TV broadcast area for the 49ers or Titans, this game is exclusively on NFL Network tonight. Okay. It is not on your local Fox station. Had to get that in there.
This game tonight, I'm not going to spoil it, but I have my eyes on this game between the Titans and the 49ers tonight. What other games stand out to you when you looked at the slate of games?
We need to talk about tonight, right?
Okay, let's talk about tonight.
Okay.
But I can't talk about it without giving up the fact that it's
all right.
I'll.
All right, I'll move on to the next
one. You know where I'm going with that.
Game that intrigues me this week because I don't understand the line.
Okay.
Cleveland at Green Bay. Green Bay only laying 7.5. After what I saw out of that Cleveland team, yeah, they fought. This does not look like a team that can go into Green Bay in the cold and beat the Packers, who, as we all know, turn it on at this time of year. Barely snuck out of M&T Bank Stadium last week with a win against the Ravens, but I just see Green Bay needs to be laying more than the 7.5. The money agrees with me. A lot of money's coming on Green Bay. That's why this is a -112 mm-hmm. betting prop. But yeah, what do you think on that game?
I agree with you that I'm shocked it's not more. I guess the people in Vegas just think the Browns are what everybody thought the Browns were at the beginning of the year. Like, I think everybody thought the Browns were going to win the AFC North, right?
Yeah.
So maybe they think Baker will be back and he'll be feeling himself after being out. I don't know. The Browns are just...
Along with recovering from COVID, he's suddenly healthy all over his body again. I don't think so.
Where do you even start with the Browns? Like, to be completely honest, he's just a lot.
Like me and my my friends like to say, when we talk about my old pickup truck that is a piece of interesting something, held together with duct tape and paper clips. And that's kind of how Baker Mayfield is right now, limping towards the end of the season. So
we could talk about it in the off season, but... Just quick tangent here. Would you, if you were the Browns and you were Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski, would you extend Baker or would you go QB shopping?
I would go QB shopping in a heartbeat unless he wanted to take a mid-level deal.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, we can talk about that in the offseason. We'll have lots of time to talk about those types of things in the offseason of the Bengals Beat podcast. But continuing on talking about this weekend's games, how about this game, the Colts and Cardinals? How do you even go about picking someone in that game? Obviously, Arizona is favored. But I think that the Colts are going to win that game. The Cardinals have been horrible at home.
So this was another one that confused me. It's only a half point. Makes no sense to me. After last week's two games, the Colts getting a mini bye coming off that Thursday night game where they dominated the Patriots. It's a half point.
Right.
Arizona has shown no ability to win at home, let alone dominate.
Right. And they lost to the Lions last week. Like, can we talk about that?
Yeah.
I agree that game is one that is a little interesting when you look at the spread. Couple others. Ooh, let's see. Man, there's like Bengals Ravens is obviously we'll talk about that.
We'll talk
one
about
in
that
depth
at the end.
But how about this one? The Rams at Vikings. I could see this being – this was in my conversation for potential home dog pick. I could see the Vikings winning this game against the Rams.
It's interesting because this does feel like another one of those, as we've talked about multiple times, Mike Zimmer type games, right?
Mm-hmm. And now they're 7-7, so they've got stuff to play for.
And, you know, the Rams have not looked great. Matt Stafford down the stretch has not looked great in spots.
They don't look good against the run on defense.
Correct.
And Dalvin Cook, as you know, is what the Vikings want to do.
The Vikings are not going to win if Kirk Cousins has to carry them to victory. That's been very, very evident. So, yeah, I'm not going to cement this as my home dog of the week pick, but yes, I.
Okay. I got to ask you about this game because this is just funny to me. Jaguars at Jets.
If you're watching this, if you're watching this and you're listening to, if you're planning to watch this game and you're listening to this podcast, please pay attention to the 1-800 Gambler thing at the end. Cause while I love you as a listener and a football fan, you are a degenerate because there is no way this will be a good football game. Holy cow. Jags getting 1.5 going into New Jersey. You know what? Just get
simply
nuts.
Because Trevor Lawrence.
Well, they're getting 1.5. So the Jets aren't going to have Robert Saleh, right? Yeah. He's out with COVID. So it's like, hey, nameless, faceless special teams coordinator who's not going to be probably on the staff next year, you're up. I would go just under in this game. Mm-hmm. 41.5 is the over-under.
Right.
If these two teams combine for more than 30 points, I'll be surprised. Just because the Jets don't have an offense and Trevor Lawrence, I'll just go ahead. Rest in peace, Dennis Green, one of my favorite coaches of all time. He is who I thought he was. Go ahead and crown him.
What about the Bills at Patriots?
Love this. Love the rematch. There's not going to be 60-mile-an-hour wins. But Bill Belichick coming off a loss, going against a divisional foe. In Foxborough, only laying 2.5. I have a hard time taking the Bills in this spot. I like New England minus the 2.5. I like them to control the ball. Obviously, they'll throw it more than 3 times this game. But coming off that loss, this is like a perfect setup for Bill Belichick to just say, oh, did you enjoy your one division title that I let you have last year? Because it's never happening again.
Okay. So those are the games that really stand out. I mean, the other one we could quickly talk about is Washington football team versus the Dallas Cowboys, the rematch. Seems like they just played yesterday. All the talk about the benches, the Cowboys flying in the benches, and now the Washington football team is bringing their benches, and it's just weird. That rivalry is something. Any chance you think the WFT upsets the Cowboys in this one?
I do not. I do not like the line in this, 9.5.
Yeah.
I think this is more of a touchdown, 4-point type game, but no.
Well, if you watch the first one where the Cowboys almost choked that one away.
Yeah. Well, not only that, you've got the Mike McCarthyism of giving away terrible clock management, giving away timeouts, giving away possessions down the stretch. He's got awful at it. I like Washington plus the points in this one. I don't trust Dallas to blow out anybody right now.
I agree with that. Okay, so let's talk about home dogs because then we'll talk about Bengals-Ravens.
Yep.
We'll give Bengals-Ravens its love and do a whole segment on it. I'm going to roll with the Tennessee Titans because
– we did not coordinate this. But
we have the same one?
We are together on this.
High five.
There we go.
Similar to the Rams, right? The Titans have not played well. They come into a big primetime game against a team that's hot. I think the Titans win this game at home. And I think it's a game where you look and you say, Titans have some really good wins, but then they have some really horrible losses. I can't figure out the Titans, but for whatever reason, Mike Vrabel seems to get his guys ready to go on primetime and playing well in December. And I read that A.J. Brown is supposed to be back for this game, so that's a boost to their offense because without A.J. Brown, they've really struggled. And then, you know, in a couple weeks, I heard that they're expecting to get Derrick Henry back in the playoffs.
He'll be back in the playoffs.
So I think that the Titans pull ahead and win this game at home, even though 49ers are favored. Rightfully so, the 49ers are playing really well right now, but I'm going to roll with the Tennessee Titans and the Fighting Mike Vrabels.
I agree with you there. I've got two reasons for this.
Okay.
A lot of people call them the throw-in-the-sink games, have-to-win game, must-win games, whatever in the NFL. Do you remember the movie Rookie of the Year?
No.
Henry Rowan Gardner, you're a little too young. Kid, like 10-year-old, 12-year-old kid, breaks his arm. Heels back. He's got these tendons that he can throw a frozen rope from the outfield in Wrigley Field to the catcher. Throws like 120 miles, whatever. Mm-hmm. 120 miles an hour, whatever. Obvious plot arc at the very end of the movie. The magic gift goes away. And he has to underhand lob the ball because he can't even throw like 40 miles an hour because he's just a kid, right? So Nick Nolte, I think it was Nick Nolte, whoever it is. Anyways, it comes out to the mound to give him a pep talk.
Okay.
Tells him, kid, this is the have to. And he looks at him all confused. He's like, doesn't matter if you can, doesn't matter if you want to, you have to. You have to do this. Well, right now, if you look at the AFC playoff picture, Mike Vrabel's Titans have to right now.
Absolutely.
Because I don't think anybody wants to go to Arrowhead in January and try to win there. So, A, this is a have-to game. B, I know he looked really good considering what they asked him to do in the offense against the Bengals for about 65% of the time.
Jimmy Garoppolo.
Jimmy G in prime time. Feed me at least two stupid interceptions, minimum.
And then as the camera pans to Kyle Shanahan, just looking absolutely disgusted in
just
his quarterback.
Kyle Shanahan like, I'm going to go take the valve cores out of your tires and your Lamborghini or whatever when we get back to San Francisco. Yeah. Jimmy G in primetime and the have-to game for the Vrabels. Yes, I love Tennessee to win outright in this game. I also like the under. 44.5 seems like a high number for two teams that need to control the game on the ground.
And I don't believe Ryan Tannehill can consistently win in shootout type fashion. So
correct.
I agree with you. I think this is a lower scoring game, definitely taking the under. All right. So let's talk about the game of the week between the Bengals.
Game
and
of the season. Let's be honest.
And biggest game of Zach Taylor's career as a head coach for the Bengals.
100%. Except for when he made the call to bench Andy Dalton in his first year to guarantee that first overall pick to land, as Doc calls him, St. Joe.
St. Joe. All right. Give me your – before you reveal your advice here, give me your opening thoughts on this game.
I don't see a way – with everything being as it is now, no crazy roster adjustments, no crazy injuries, COVID list, whatever. I don't see a way that the Bengals lose to the Ravens.
Huh.
They so thoroughly do two offenses via their defense, even last week. Now, granted, I know that Lamar Jackson wasn't quarterbacking the Broncos, but Teddy Bridgewater, who's a poor man's Lamar Jackson, was for a decent amount of that game, couldn't do anything against that defense without starters. The Bengals' dismantling of Baltimore earlier this year gave the blueprint to the Dolphins to beat them, gave the blueprint to the Packers defense, gave the blueprint to the rest of the NFL for this is how you shut these guys down. You run a steady, stable 8-9 person box if you have to.
Yeah.
You say, I know you have one receiver in Mark Andrews who can do anything to me. Beyond that, sorry, test your luck. I don't see how the Bengals, like I said, as they would line up today, I don't see how the Bengals lose this game.
Wow. I'm not ready to go there. But, I mean, the reason I'm not going there is because when this offense can consistently show up for more than two games in a row in the first half, that's when I'll go into a statement like that. But
they didn't show up in the first half last week, so they got a fresh start this week.
But they've needed a fresh start for the last 3 weeks and it hasn't come. I think the Bengals will win if they get up early on the Ravens, because even if Lamar plays, he's probably not going to be 100% Superman Lamar Jackson. So there's probably going to be some limitations to what he's able to do. But the Ravens are a team, and the Packers saw it. If you mess around and you don't take care of business in the first half on your trips to the red zone, the Ravens are good enough and their coach has them ready to play every week that they will hang around. And in December, they're playing for something. And so I think that the only way the Bengals definitely win this game is if they are up at least a touchdown heading into halftime. And I read a stat. Zach Taylor has not won a game in his career as a head coach when trailing in the fourth quarter.
He never has. Going into the fourth quarter.
Against the Ravens, the Bengals need to be up heading into the fourth quarter, because I mean the numbers just tell you, and from your eyeballs of watching this team, things don't technically – I mean, Joe Burrow can do everything he physically can to help them get in a position to win, but The Bengals will beat the Ravens if they have a lead for a majority of the game and they kind of explode out of the gates like we saw them back on October 24th. If they muddle around in the first half and have a turnover, or if they can't really score and do all that, all bets are off.
I don't disagree. Now, let me get to the gambling angle on this, because this is
it's what you guys came
the
for.
Half point with the Cardinals Colts is the one that blows my mind as far as the spread goes. Yeah. The money right now for this game blows my mind. Bengals are giving 3.5 on the spread. Mm-hmm. Baltimore's getting 3.5. Baltimore's a -130. However, the Bengals are a +105. Now, you can get, for them to win outright, you have to pay. It's a -128.
Yeah.
You got to pay 128 to win 100. To cover the spread, you can make $5 on your 100. Pay 100, win 105. I know that 3.5, that extra half point's probably what's doing it. But I was just intrigued looking at this because Baltimore to cover the spread is such an overwhelming favorite. I don't know why this line hasn't moved. Normally this line, if it got to that, it would normally move down to 3 or 2.5.
Right.
They're doing this solely to keep the money as even as they can, because I guarantee if it went down to 2.5, a bunch more money would come in on Cincinnati. Give them a liability, a risk, whatever. I was just intrigued to see laying the points was plus money this week.
You think it would have been different had Lamar Jackson fully healthy coming into this game?
No, because he was fully healthy when they played in October and looked like a complete shell of himself. Mm-hmm. I think Louis Anarumo, say whatever you want about him, say whatever you want about the personnel that's actually healthy going into this week. That guy, for some reason, has it figured out, I think. I'll be proven wrong this Sunday. Who knows? But he seems to have it figured out. Like I said, his defensive attack in October was the blueprint for all these other NFL teams upsetting the Ravens this year.
Well, he did say – I asked him about it in training camp in the feature.
You can read it on Cincinnati.com.
Yeah. I did a Q&A with him, and I said, do you spend extra time in the offseason dedicated – to your division? And he said, yes. Like Bengals defensive coaching staff spent, I don't know how many weeks, but literally going through the tape and dissecting how they would go about. And they built their defense to beat the Ravens, essentially.
It's what you have to do. Yeah. It's a measured risk, right?
Yeah. Or
going into this year, you can worrying about Baker Mayfield beating you, which he has. He owns the Bengals. He's had their number.
That was a pretty bad loss for the Bengals, thinking about it.
But if you look at the whole division, right, you would think it went through Baltimore this year, regardless of everyone saying, oh, Cleveland's back, baby, baby. They've never been there, so they're not really back. I think Lou Anarumo, for some reason, has it figured out.
He does. So lots to be excited about for the matchup between the Bengals and Ravens. Are there any other thoughts you have about this weekend's games, Jason?
No, just one more on the Bengals and the Ravens. The over-under is 45.5. I love the forecast on Sunday. However, I do not like these two teams to get into a shootout.
I'm looking at it right now.
It's going to be warm, a little rain possibly, but it's warm. I don't like the over in this. I like the under. That's three unders this week. That's kind of weird. So I'm going to throw one more over in there. Miami and New Orleans, 38.5 over under. I know New Orleans only beat the Buccaneers.
I would like, are you picking the Dolphins?
No, I'm picking the over.
Of course you're not, because you were the biggest Dolphins hater, might I remind you, in like week
Dolphins
three.
Hater.
Just saying.
I am the biggest Dolphins hater.
They've won like seven games, right, in a row?
I'm still the biggest Dolphins hater. Okay. They're not making the playoffs. Tua's not an NFL quarterback, yada, yada, yada. But 38.5 over under. You know what? Screw it. Go over. Who knows? Hope for points. 38.5 Miami, New Orleans on Monday night. And I'd like to remind everybody listening, all the gambling talk that we do here is not advice. It is simply for fun. And if you or anyone you know has a problem with gambling, please contact 1-800-GAMBLER. All lines are courtesy of Tipico Sportsbook, which is a partner of Gannett Company, Inc., our parent company. And Gannett does make money off of that partnership, so please keep that in mind. All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week.